Hello, everyone, and welcome to Hit and Hustle from IrishSportsDaily.com. I'm your host, Greg Flamong, and with me, as always, is Jamie Uwayama, Mr. Jamie University. It is Wednesday, January 31st, and we're going to do some hot takes today. We usually do Hot Take Tuesday or Hot Take Thursday. Today, we're going to do Hot Take Wednesday. So we're going to have some hot takes regarding Notre Dame football and Notre Dame football adjacent topics. We're going to touch on the news on Riley Leonard a little bit, just and a little cleanup on the ankle. So we'll talk about that, his availability for the spring and things of that nature. And whatever comes up in the chat, I got Coach Humph in here already. He's got some hot takes. We're going to throw those up before we get going or before we get to ours. So thank you everyone for tuning in. As always, if you haven't done so already, please subscribe to this channel. Please subscribe to this show. Please hit the like button on this show if you like what you hear here. And then hit the notification bell so you know whatever it is we are going live or releasing a video. Links to this podcast are in a description or in the description below. And listen, Jamie, we've been talking about ESQ's bamboo dress shirts a ton on this show, right? ESQ, sponsor of this show. Thank you much to God Wang for sponsoring the show. And we've been talking about the bamboo dress shirts, but the thing about ESQ clothing, Jamie, is it's not just dress shirts. You got tuxedos. You've got bomber jackets. You've got sport coats. You got all that stuff, right? And so you want to head over to ESQ, which is founded by Notre Dame alum, Godwing. You've seen ESQ on all your favorite Notre Dame players and coaches. Over a decade of making the best custom clothing available, ESQ will help you look and feel your best in 2024. For perfect fitting suit or sport coat, shirt or bomber jacket, or the perfect tuxedo for wedding season, check out God's amazing work at esqclothing.com. Book your appointment to upgrade your wardrobe today. Mention ISD to get 10% off your entire purchase. Mention ISD for 10% off your entire purchase. Tuxedos, bomber jackets, all that good stuff. You're going to look great. God's going to make you look good. He makes the Notre Dame football team look good. He can do that for you as well. Jamie, let's get to some of Coach Humph's hot takes here. Let's see. The internet went out, so the first one. Okay, here we go. The first one from Coach Humph. One, Kingston Viliamuasa is starting. He's going to start at Mike. I assume he means Mike. One of the two linebacker spots. He says KVA is going to be a starter. The linebackers will be just as good. Number two is the linebackers will be just as good and probably better than last year. That's his second one. He's got four. If Notre Dame beats Texas A&M, then expect Notre Dame to run the table. And the fourth one, if Notre Dame finishes in the top four and gets bumped to the fifth seed, Greg and Jamie will come around and agree with me that Notre Dame has a big advantage that way. Of those four, Jamie, which one do you want to touch on right off the top?
I guess the KVA one, which is, I don't even think that's the hottest take, but, sorry, Coach Trump, I'm not trying to diss your hot take, but like, I don't think it's like crazy to think that he could start. I think he's going to play for sure. And yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised that if he eventually becomes a starter, if he's not like a day one guy, you know, like Ben Morrison wasn't a day one guy, but he was eventually. Joe Alt, same thing, right? Like it happens like that. And I could easily see that because I think he's one of like the most advanced linebackers they've signed ever, really, right? Like in the kind of the Teo mold. But I think one thing that I'll hit back on is the linebackers will be just as good, probably better. If he's starting, and I'm not to say that he won't be good, but like you have to remember that like Jalen Smith and Manti Te'o were not Jalen Smith and Manti Te'o that they were as sophomores and beyond. You know, those guys took big jumps near as freshmen. They still look like freshmen. You could tell the talent was there, but you could see a lot of freshman stuff there, right? Like in terms of like they weren't close to fully developed. So I think even as talented as a freshman as a guy like KVA is, would he be as good as JD Bertrand as a fifth year JD Bertrand? Probably not. Not right away. Maybe in year two, maybe. But like, I think that's a lot to ask. So that one, I mean, I guess I sort of agree, but like, I don't know about the second. the second part, his second part of the hot take is, it's a little tougher to the one doesn't fit with the two, to me. Yeah. If the case.
Yeah. So I think if Notre Dame beats A&M, expect Notre Dame to run the table. That's not bad. It's hard to say. Yeah. It's hard to say. Like it. I think that's pretty fair. The top four thing, like it's. I don't know that Notre Dame. So the thing is, once you get fifth, it's kind of unknowable how big of an advantage it is versus another situation. Like they have to be fifth. So like, look, there are advantages. I talked about it before. Like they do get to they're not going to get like a premier opponent in that case, and then you get to have like it starts off a situation where it's week after week and there's not a big gap in between games, which is, I think, to Notre Dame's advantage. I think that's been a problem for them in the past. And so that kind of problem gets eliminated there. I mean, you'd rather have a bye, right? Like you can't lose a game if you're not playing in it. Right. Yeah. So that's pretty simple. And then I believe they reseed after the opening game. So like,
I think so.
If that's the case, then you're getting the weakest opponent and you get a bye. Right. So that's obviously advantageous for the situation. So yeah, not bad, Coach Humph. We appreciate the interactions there. Patrick Carter always asking Kyle Hamilton questions. I appreciate it. How many more touchdowns does Baltimore score if they played Kyle Hamilton on offense? Kyle Hamilton never fumbled going into the end zone. I'll tell you that. That's never happened, Jamie. And he has scored a touchdown in his, he scored a touchdown this year on a pick six against, the Browns. And then he scored at Notre Dame. And so, look at teams. Don't be afraid to use your best players both ways. That's my hot take for forever. That will always be my hot take. Don't be afraid to use your best athletes both ways. All right, Jamie, let's touch on this Riley Leonard situation real quick. Yesterday, Tyler Horka of On3 reported that, or broke the news, I should say, that Riley Leonard had surgery on his ankle. And the wording of it is I think the news is that he had a procedure on his ankle and he's going to miss winter workouts. I think that's kind of where everyone is at with it. He is going to miss winter workouts. He had a procedure on his ankle. Matt Freeman reported that it's the same ankle that he hurt against Notre Dame. So it didn't get fully cleaned up, or the recovery didn't fully take care of what the problem was. He had a procedure on it. He's going to miss winter workouts, right? Now, I think there's some disagreement. And Rob Hunt, Notre Dame's head athletic trainer, like he quote tweeted and said, the reporting is inaccurate. The story is inaccurate. Be better is what he said, or says something to that effect. He didn't specify what was inaccurate. He just said it's inaccurate. Rob Hunt famously does not like it when it's Notre Dame player injuries are reported on, period. So that's another factor in this.
Sorry, Rob. Yeah, that's a dumb opinion.
It's not great. It's
the job of the reporters to report.
Well, it's a factual thing, right?
Yeah.
If a procedure happened, it's not like we're going into the hospital records, Like, yeah. And the other part too is like he's walking around campus with a brace on his ankle. Can people not go to message boards and be like, hey, I saw Riley Leonard on crutches. I saw Riley Leonard with a brace on his ankle. Like, can people not talk about that? Like, I don't know. It's a fact. It's a public fact that something happened. And so I think it's okay to talk about it. But regardless of the fact, there's kind of, Mike Berardino, South Bend Tribune. I think it was Eric Hansen with Rivals, Notre Dame Insider, I believe is what they're called. ND Insider, ND Insider. They both reported that he's expected back for the spring. Matt reported that it's not supposed to be long term. So I think Matt is also kind of reporting that it's expected that he's going to be back for the spring or most of the spring. It is what it is. And he's going to miss winter workouts, should be around for the spring. It's a story. I don't think it's a huge story, though, Jamie.
I don't think it's a big story at all. Like, he's not missing anything that would impact his ability to compete for the job or to win the job.
Yeah.
So that's not going to matter. You know, a winter workout for a guy who's, you know, going into his fourth year, he doesn't have to make like big physical gains or anything like that. That's not something. It's like, you know, we're mentioning some of the guys in the last Hit and Hustle. We're talking about these guys need to do this like this kind of physical development. That's not the case with Riley Leonard. Like, you know, I guess he won't be able to show, you know, his teammates his like work ethic in terms of whatever, but it's like, well, he's going to get to do that as soon as he's healthy enough to do that. He's going to get to do that. Like,
yeah,
it's not that's not going to make a huge, huge difference. And the main thing is that if he's able to come out and actually play well in the spring and look good in the spring, that earns the respect of his teammates, and that kind of stuff is whatever. And who he is as a person and all that, like that's going to matter more than anything. So like the winter workout part, to me, it's not even really news, to be honest. Like, yeah, it's like, I get why you report it. I'm not shading Horka or anyone who would report it, but I'm just saying it's not the kind of news where it deserved On3's got to create a graphic for it. You know, that in my
well opinion. That's, yeah, I mean, yeah,
but that's the how they do, you know, it, whatever. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, yeah. I you know, like the problem is like I've heard about this. People have been asking me about this for the last, I don't know, a little bit, I guess, because like, look, he's on campus on crutches or on, it has a brace, like, and so people are wondering like, what is that, right? And so it's not bad to just say like, hey, this is why this is the case. You know, he didn't trip down the stairs, right? A la Tyler Buchner. But so, you know, that's what's going on. So that's what's going on with him.
Also, by the way, the guy played on this ankle after it.
Yeah.
After this happened. Yeah. I think he's a pretty tough kid. So
tough kid.
Yeah.
Maybe in hindsight shouldn't have done that. But the, hey, no, you,
he just, he, it just shows though, he wanted to be out there. So, yeah. I mean, you know, all respect to him.
Yeah. The respect to Riley Leonard. Good job by him. All right. Let's move on to some of these hot takes, Jamie. I'll introduce it and you can go with it, 'cause this one's yours. Speaking of linebackers, we've been watching the Senior Bowl highlights and some news coming off the ticker, and Maris Leofau showing himself well. Jamie says Maris Leofau will be the third Notre Dame player off the board, presumably after Joe Alt and Audric Estime. Am I correct in that assumption?
I actually think Cam Hart is going to be the second.
Let's go. Wait, Jamie buried the lead. Let me change it. Tell me about Cam Hart.
Well, one, no. I think the media, yeah, where he's projected by the media is like way off of what teams are going to value, because I know, Greg, you've always been a big Cam Hart proponent of how he's played and his, like, there, the guy has played well. He's played well, and he's going to test off the charts. He is going to test off the charts, and he's a 6'2 corner who can run and can play man coverage, like you saw at the beginning of the Senior Bowl and stuff. Like, that's valuable. That's valuable. He's going to be a day two pick. And I always kind of thought that once they start kind of evaluating, that is kind of where he was going to go anyways. Right? Like, because if I compared him to, say, like Troy Pride, who was a fourth round pick, right? You know, kind of borderline, could have been a maybe like a third rounder or whatever. Like, Hart is a better prospect than Pride was, and frankly was a more productive player than Pride, you know, overall, right? Like, guy made 33 havoc plays in his career. You know, he's a 3-year starter, and got better and better and developed, I think he's gonna go high. Like, I think people who didn't acknowledge it this year, I mean, I get the feeling too, just by some of the reactions from some of the people, a lot of people didn't watch the Notre Dame defense that closely this year, just based on the reactions. The reason I think, say, like Audric Estime is not going to be, I think just it's running backs, it's just it's just one of those things where I just think you're just devalued. And it's not to say that he won't be like a top five back off the board. I just think that he will just dip lower than you should, because that's where backs go, right? Like, that's just where it is. And can, and since he's not in you know, the Bijan Robinson, Jahmyr Gibbs type of class, especially as a receiver, and how he's viewed there, I just don't see him being like a super high pick off the board. So he's going to probably go a bit lower than people think. So, and I think with Leafau, the main thing is that, you know, his value, first of all, guy at 34 inch arms, that's like defensive end. That's like long for a D end. Like, that is very, very, like, that is eye catching right there. Which, if you've seen him in person, it, that's not surprising. Like, the guy has got freaky long arms, but, you know, to see that and know that right away, the fact that he's 239 pounds, they probably can put more weight on him. That he's a guy who could play edge, who can play inside linebacker, be a sub package guy, rush the passer from inside and out, cover. That's NFL linebackers today. And I'm not to say that he didn't have holes in his game that would whatever, because if he had other parts of his game, then maybe he'd be a first rounder, like, or something, but he, or, you know, or like a second rounder. But the thing is like, when you have someone who has all these things that you want with modern day linebackers, right, that ups your value, because he's not just a two down linebacker or even just a regular off the ball player. He's a guy who's going to play on third down, and third down is money. That is money. I mean, he played the money backer position at Notre Dame and played it well. So like, when you're watching these games and you hear like, well, man, it was huge that Willie Gay was going to be out for you know, KC, because they're like,
yeah,
well, this guy was going to spy, you know, Lamar in the game. Well, that's the kind of thing that Maris did for Notre Dame and will be asked to do in the NFL if he develops enough, right? Like, he's not going to be a guy who comes in right away and starts or anything like that. But to be that kind of guy there, it's just, he has all these things. He has these physical checkpoints. He has the ability to rush a passer. He's violent. And he really hasn't played that much football in terms of, because of his injury and stuff too. Yeah. So I think he's going to go much higher than people think. And I saw like, you know, Matt Freeman mentioned to me that, you know, PFF had him projected to go in the third round. And I was like, I can kind of see it. I can kind of see it because of his value specific to whatever. And it's not to say that he was a better player than JD Bertrand, you know, but he, his value in terms of it is different than a guy like JD Bertrand's.
I mean, I think the kind of the comp to that is like Tavon Coney had much better numbers than Drew Tranquil did.
Yeah.
Drew Tranquil's playing the Super Bowl for the Chiefs, you know, like
perfect he's, example.
Like perfect. It's like being able to do something that's projectable into the NFL. You know, it doesn't mean you're better, right? That's not always how it works in football. It's like, it's not about, you know, who's the better player all the time. It's just like, who can project to do the thing that a team wants you to do, right? Like, there's always a role for a guy like Marist.
Scheme versatile.
Yeah, exactly. And there was the, you know, I'm not a big like GPS guy as far as like, this guy ran, you know, 19.4 miles an hour. Like, he hit the top speed. That's not my thing. Okay. I don't like it, but
I like it. I think it's good, but
I don't like it because, well, when it's to like the pros and stuff, I think it's a little bit different because that's like legit. Like some of these high school guys where it's like, hey,
he
hit 2 miles an hour and it's like losing huddle tape. And it's like, well, what's going on here?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. No, I'm 100% with you there. I do think I'm like, wow, this is some really fancy AI. If they could tell.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, oh yeah. Look at this sophomore from, you know, Piscataway's hitting 23 miles an hour on this 50 yard run. No, but he tested among the top players at the position in top end speed for the GPS stuff. And like, whether I agree with it or not, like scouts like it, right? So they can come up with a way for him. I would still be very surprised if he went before Audric, just because like, is he like an every down guy, you know? Like, is he like, he does have, there is some special teams, you know, value there, which matters a lot, right? Like, you're not just a third down guy. Like, you can run down on special teams, and that's where the GPS stuff comes in. That's where like the arm length and all that other things, like, they play into it. I'd be surprised, but hey, if for a spicy take, I like it. It's good. And that conversation kind of leads to my first one, Jamie. Recruiting rankings are a sham. And here's the thing, okay? I do want to make the distinction between rankings and ratings. I think ratings are okay, right? Like, if you rate a guy, when we have a conversation about a prospect, right? And Matt will say, like, hey, what do you think of X guy? And I'll look and I'll say, Jamie, what do you think? Like 92? Or like something like that. Because like, then you're saying, this guy, I don't know how he relates to like another person or this person or that person, like rating that, ranking them. But in terms of like, yeah, he's a 92 type player. Like, that's okay, in my opinion. That's fine. But like, when you get into rankings and stuff, like we talked about before, after you get out of like the top guys, the difference between like the 100th guy and the 200th guy and the 250th guy and the 300th guy, like,
it's very negligible.
It's so marginal. And what matters, the only thing that really matters, is what can the player do and how does that fit with the team that he's going to go to? For example, like, Teddy Rezac is a perfect example of this, in my opinion. Like, he's ranked low, right? No one really knows what his position is, but like, there are things he could do. He can run. He is long. He is very similar to Marist in this way. Like, he can run. He is long. He's athletic. He has position versatility, and you can put him in all different sorts of situations, right? Well, Notre Dame knows how to use guys like this. Okay, so his value to Notre Dame is different than his value to, say, Nebraska, just his home state school, right? Like, so where he's ranked is kind of irrelevant. It doesn't matter. Even his offers are kind of irrelevant. Doesn't really matter. Notre Dame knows how to use a guy like this. He can run. He has all of the traits that Notre Dame wants in this position. So his ranking, it's not really important. It's not something that people should really talk about. And it's like this kind of across the board with like a number of prospects, right? And so like, to me, it's like, and look, I make the mistake too. I talk about rankings too much. Like, if the ranking is good, I'll say top 100 caliber guy. Like, I did it all last show talking about like Josh Burnham and Jalen Sneed and Junior Tulihalamaka, right? I was like, oh, they were all top 100 caliber guys. Well, what does that mean, really, right? They can do what they can do, and how does that project into Notre Dame's defense? And so, like, that's how we should evaluate players, much more so than, hey, this guy is ranked 88th, and he is so much better and more valuable than the guy who was ranked, 288th.
Yeah.
Like, Bryce Young is no different as a prospect today than he was 6 months ago when he was ranked much lower, right? Same thing with Kedron Young. You know, those guys, well, when you
see the film of the senior year, like,
you have the film, but like, it shows what it shows, right? Like, hey, these guys, like, they're really good. Like, they can still do what they can do, right? Bryce Young, tall, long, explosive,
you're still projecting, right?
So it's like, they're still the same players. And so it's just like, we really got to get away from that stuff. What can they do? What can they do? And how does that project to the team that they're going to?
Well, okay. I agree with you to a certain respect. And it's funny because Tyler, except the
ISD Fab 50. Yeah. But I even have a caveat to that. I'll let you go, and then I'll give you a kick.
Well, I would say even too, the one of the things with the Fab 50 that I do always mention is that the difference, I always mention that there's guys who were like, didn't make it, that are in the same tier as the guys that are in it. So it doesn't really matter that they're not in it, you know? Mm-hmm. And, or the fact that, you know, I think we talked about it here, maybe not or whatever, but, or maybe someone asked me on the board for ISD, but like how Cam Williams dropped to 80, whatever, for 24/7 or whatever he was. Right. I'm like, who cares? He's this, like you said, he's the same prospect. And also, too, the difference between him being the eighth best receiver and the 13th, it's extremely negligible. Like, it just, like, it doesn't really matter. It's like, so what I always think of guys, it's like, put it this way. No one has, like, teams have their board, like, programs have their board of guys that they like and whatever. And different programs, you know, they have grades, right? They give grades out and they grade different ways. But I know, like, definitely that certain programs will have, like, tiers of, like, this guy is, like, someone we think is going to be a first round. Tier one, whatever, or, like, A, tier A or whatever, first round potential, blah, 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 whatever. Another thing, multi-year starter, blah, blah, you know, and they have these different kind of things and they put guys in tiers, right? And that's how they do it. And really, all rankings are in this, and really kind of the stuff for, like, you know, as it's NFL draft time, the same thing too with, like, mock drafts and all that too. It really doesn't mean that much because it's like one of those things where if the quarterback gets drafted into a bad situation, and it's like Bryce Young, for example, he got drafted into a much worse situation than CJ Stroud. And I'm not saying that CJ Stroud isn't better or going to be better. And maybe they made the wrong pick. Maybe they did. Right. But like, if Bryce Young got put on the Texans, I don't know if they're going to make the playoffs, but I guarantee you he is going to look way better than he did for the Carolina Panthers this year. Right. Mm-hmm. So all of that kind of stuff plays into the equation, and it's like everybody's always a believer in their own ability, and I get it, right? It's like part of what makes players great is that you have to have this kind of self-confidence and think like, I can do this, or I can be this, and I can do this anywhere. But to me, like, if I'm saying, for example, tight ends, you're an insane person as a tight end if you're not being like, well, I want to go to Iowa, Notre Dame, or wherever. You just are. Because some teams use the tight end. Some teams teach guys how to block. Some guys feature the tight end and make that a big deal as part of their offense. And 90% of the other teams don't care. Or you're just a big slot. You know, and why don't people, these tight ends, think about that? Like, I don't ever get it. Like, I just don't understand it. So, if I look at, say, Georgia, obviously, I mean, they like to play with multiple tight ends and use them. And look how Brock Bowers was used. Like, that's great. But there's just other teams. It's just like, it doesn't even matter that some of these guys are super talented or whatever. They just get stuck and they're just like useless. And I don't even think, and I'm like, some of these guys could have been studs if they went to the right school, but they chose whatever, because I mean, I'm not saying you should only choose because of what you think, you know, is the best for your NFL future. There's a lot of other stuff that goes to it. You want to be happy. You want to be in the sun or whatever, right? Whatever you want to look at. But there's a lot of reasons why guys don't end up being great and whatever. So, like, I don't know that, like, say, Carter Nelson, for example. I don't know that Carter Nelson might not just be this absolute phenom that, you know, he's a freak athlete. You know, the guy played eight-man football, for people who don't know. He signed with Nebraska. You know, Notre Dame was, you know, very interested in him, wanted to still add him to the class, but he was going to stick with Nebraska. and that's fine. But I mean, and I, truth be told, I don't know enough about, you know, Nebraska's offensive philosophy and what their, you know, Matt Rule's track record with tight ends or whatever, right? Yeah. I don't know enough about that. Maybe he just hasn't had the right tight end to do that. But I do think if I'm Carter Nelson and if it's close between schools or whatever, I'm looking at the one school that I know is going to throw the ball to the tight end, is going to feature them, play them. You're going to, even when you're not the starter, you're going to still get a chance to play and develop. Like, that is something that I don't think goes into the thoughts of all these people, and why I've seen, I don't know how many, there's a lot of misses on the tight ends in terms of rankings, a lot of misses. And, you know, certainly some of these guys end up being studs and whatever, but there's a lot of guys that you're like, man, this guy was like a top 50 kid. Why did he do nothing? He probably went to the wrong school. Like, that's a lot of it.
What? Holden stays. He left Notre Dame to go to Tennessee. What Tennessee tight end has done anything ever under Heupel?
I mean, honestly, I don't know. And I can't.
What's that, Jason Witten? Like, yeah, Jason Witten. You know, like all the way back to 2000. Like,
I haven't studied Heupel's, like what happened at UCF or when he was at Mizzou for that couple years or whatever. And like all that, I don't know. Right. So I don't know whether or not like that, you know, is going to be something where it's like, okay, well, Stays is going to eat. And like, this is whatever, maybe just, maybe they have had tight ends. They just haven't had somebody's going to say, I don't know. Right. But I mean, I'm just looking at kind of like where their offense was, you know, what they had, the Hendon Hooker offense, right? And they're just like, they're like, screens and chucking it deep. And I'm like,
yeah,
that's not a tight end friendly offense. That isn't.
Right.
It isn't. And that's, you know, they go the hurry up, no huddle, screens and chucking it deep. And I mean, that's just one of those things. And I mean, that's one of the things with, if you look at, with the receivers and how they were evaluated, they're like, man, it's really tough to get evaluation on these receivers because these guys don't run any routes. They run goes, they run goes, and then they run hitches. Like, that's it, right? So it's like, where does the tight end kind of fit into that? So it's like, is he going to develop there the same way that he would have at Notre Dame? Probably not. But you know, at the same time, he thinks he's going to get a shine there. So I don't know if I was, I mean, personally, whatever, it's not like he's asking me, but if I was advising someone like Holden Stays, I'd be like, you need to look at how tight ends have been used and developed within these things, or because everyone always thinks that their talent is going to super it. Well, it's me, man. I'm going to be the guy who's just whatever. It's like, it doesn't always work that way. You can even be that good and it doesn't even matter because they don't care because they run what they run. Right. So I don't know. And then because of all that too, it's like where we can, anyone, someone could have rated Holden Stays and been like, this guy's a top 100 guy. I think he's going to be a star, whatever. And then he goes undrafted. Then people are going to be like, he was way off. Like, man, what a terrible ranking. And really, it's just, you know, circumstance that played into it, and it could have been different.
Yeah, yeah. Blayberg is out here. He makes the point the world runs on rankings in one form or another, which is true, and that's why they do it. I mean, that's fine, right? I'm not even hating on it. It just is what it is. Blayberg's ranking his kids. I want to know the criteria for that, right? Like, oh, my son, you know, it doesn't really know how to read, but the math is off the charts. And so yeah, he's ranked higher because the upside of the math, right? The upside of being able to build things.
One guy does his chores all the time.
Does his chores. It's the potential, right? But Blayberg's looking at, like, what's the potential of this? You know, my other son is big in the arts. Well, that doesn't pay very well, does it? You know, you're going to be an artist, or what's going on here? So that's stuff. Patrick Carter's ESQ number one spot for bamboo shirts in Chicago. I mean,
fair take. In the USA, man.
In the world?
Yeah.
Going all over the place. Jamie, real quick, sidebar. Chris Wawarka is asking, what makes one a good route runner? What makes someone a good route runner, Jamie?
I mean, I would say that coaching plays a huge part in it because it's something that, you know, it needs to be taught and coached too, right? Like very few people are like self-taught elite route runners. Like that's not a thing. So how you're coached, who's coaching you, what kind of emphasis they're putting on it. Also like the desire of the guy to be good. Like Jaden Greathouse is a really good route runner for his age right now. And it's going to be like a great one before he leaves Notre Dame because he wants to be, he is like been, I asked him this in the thing and he's like, I'm obsessed with playing receiver and like obsessed with like getting better and learning how to like think things. So it's like understanding leverage, understanding, you know, how to get someone to open up at a certain point. And then, you know, going off of that, like, you know, in and out of cuts as whatever, like ability, you know, short area quickness, you know, that kind of stuff is important. Short area quickness is for sure. Like it's something that can make somebody just like super duper elite at it. But here's a perfect example. Michael Mayer, not an elite short area quickness guy, really good route runner because he understood all these other parts about it, right? Like just, you know, understanding how to position your body in the right way to get to win, to run a route at the certain depth that it's supposed to be run at and all this stuff to fit within the scheme, to understand on like if you're running an option route, to understand what that leverage means and where you're going to go and the core having the quarterback be on the same page. So I guess the short answer is way too long for me to go into, but we could talk about it for like 20 minutes really for what makes it a good route runner.
It could be a long conversation. There's a part of like a sense of timing. Like you kind of brought it up. Like when someone can wrong foot you or they like a wide receiver wrong foot. So basically what it means is like they come out of their break, like on a wrong foot. Like, you know how like on a layup, for example, it's like you're on the right side, you jump off your left. You're on the left side, you jump off your right, right? Like something like that. But sometimes a player will wrong foot themselves and they'll go up sooner than you think. So Michael Mayer is actually very good at this. He is very good at wrong footing a DB where it's like he'll come up and you feel like, oh, he's going to take one extra step and then he's going to do something, but then he'll make a quick cut and he'll wrong foot you. And it's like, oh, I wasn't expecting that. And so then he gets an extra half step on a DB and that leads to the opening that he needs to make the catch. The other part is understanding how to find the blind spot of a DB. So what a blind spot means is you can get into a point where it's like if they're in bail, they can run a route to where they're behind you so you can't actually see them, right? You know that they're there, like the DB knows that they're there, but he can't, it's like you don't really see. So they can break off a route when they're in the blind spot of the defensive back. So then the break happens, the defensive back notices it a little bit like a step and a half later than normal, gets separation that way. Understanding coverages is a big part of that too. Like, so I'm going to run my route a certain kind of way versus this coverage versus that coverage. I'm going to attack the leverage of a DB based on a certain type of coverage. Like, so it all kind of goes into it. It's all inclusive. That's why it can be such a long conversation. Chris Wawarka says, I got to give props to Mike Frank. He predicted Amon-Ra when he was in high school, a junior high school. Amon-Ra is like the perfect example of a guy who isn't fast. He's a 4.5 guy. He is good at all of this. He is good at wrong footing. He is good at attacking leverage. He's good at finding blind spots. He's good at finding openings and zones, identifying coverages. So, you know, it's all inclusive there. It's all there. What were you going to say, Jamie?
I'm going to say, I'm not going to give props to Mike Frank because I was on Amon-Ra way before him. So, no, I love Mike, but I'm just saying, I saw Amon-Ra at Sound Mind, Sound Body, which is it used to be a camp in Detroit. They don't do it anymore, but it used to be this camp. They still have Sound Body, still a thing, in Detroit, but it's not a camp anymore. But it used to be one of those camps that college coaches could go to, right? So it's like there was a bunch of people, like Brian Kelly showed up, whatever, right? I mean, showed up and didn't really watch anybody, but you
know, I was going to say,
you know how it is. Yeah. BVG was there, right? I mean, a lot. Yeah. So anyways, this was at that time, there's a bunch of Andy recruits that were there, and Claypool was there. So that was one thing. So he was a guy who was at that time going into his, a junior or whatever, right? Going into it. And then remember Equinemius's brothers, Osiris St. Brown, who went to Stanford, and then Amon-Ra. And Amon-Ra was the younger one, and he was tiny. Like, he was so much smaller. Like, Osiris is like, it's so funny how Equinemius, it's like they're the Russian dolls of
whatever, whatever,
how they all went. And Amon-Ra was the smallest, and he was there. And so he was one of the younger guys who was at the camp. But he was a friggin' dog. And he, like, went up, and there was, it was a very good camp. It was a very good camp. There's a lot of, blue chip guys there, guys who went to, like, Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan State, a lot of Big Ten guys there, right? And there were some national guys, too, right, that come in for it. Obviously, Claypool's from, Western Canada, right? He's from British Columbia, and he came out for it. So there's a lot of guys who are there at it, and Amon-Ra was like punking guys 2 years older than him at this camp, and I was like, oh my god, like he was competitive, and like guys wanted to fight him after watching him, after competing against him. Like they hated him, and because he was like the kind of guy who wanted. And then throughout the next couple of years, I got to watch him a lot too. Like, he came to Irish Invasion, dominated that. He was at the opening, before his senior year, the next year, and dominated that. And it was the same thing. Like, guys wanted to fight him. Like, Asante Samuel Jr., they had some battles. And obviously, he's been a very good player in the NFL too for the Chargers. And he's like that nickel corner. They're both like short guys, super competitive, and they went at it. Like, they went at it, and it was a battle, and it was awesome. But like, I would say Amon-Ra got a little bit better, got the better of it. And I mean, he let him know that he was going to do it. He did go in the fourth round and whatever. I think he, there are 17 guys who went ahead of him, and he knows the name of every single guy. He is another guy too, that it wasn't a bad decision. You say, I know Notre Dame fans would say it was a bad decision to go to USC, but he's looking at the time, his quarterback in high school is JT Daniels. He was like, five star or whatever. He's thinking that they're going to set all these records together and all this kind of stuff. It just so happened that it was like one of the worst times to go to USC in terms of what they're doing. He was productive there. He was super productive. But I mean, I guarantee if Amon-Ra went to Alabama or something like that, he would have been really, like, he would have went like second round or something for sure. Like, even with a bad 40.
I mean, it worked out for him, right? He's gonna get a bag in his next contract. So good on him. More video emerging of Cam Hart locking down North Carolina wide receiver Tez Walker. So Jamie, your hot take, Cam Hart second round. There's momentum there. The momentum is building for that. Pete Sampson tweeted, every couple years there's a Notre Dame player who feels like he'll be a better pro than a college player. Felt that way about Cole Kmet and Romeo Okwara. Wonder if Cam Hart will be another. Cam Hart was an excellent college player, Pete. I got to talk to Pete about that. Yeah, Cam Hart was excellent. He's a three-year starter. He was had a very good career. And
Cole Kmet was great, too. He was just hurt out of time. He got hurt, and he left early.
Yeah.
Or else he would have came back and won the Mackey and whatever and all that, too. Yeah.
So head over to Twitter. Some good vid video of Cam Hart doing stuff. I'm not going to put it on the show because it kind of messes up the stream. And video is important, Jamie. Good video is very important for Cam Hart and for you and your social media page or your small business. And if you need video to enhance your situation, then what you need to do is head over to VSRMediaCompany.com, which is founded by Notre Dame pregame host and Emmy Award-winning anchor Vahid Saadrizadeh. VSR Media provides a professional and cinematic video and photo. Whether you're looking for a collegiate or pro-level highlight reel, have a personal story to tell, or are aiming to diversify and grow your business, VSR Media specializes in short and long-form video storytelling, social media management, and website design. VSR Media also captures professional headshots, senior and sports photos. Contact them at VSRMediaCompany.com. Mention Irish Sports Daily to receive 20% off your first project. Visit them online or give them a call at 574-800-9106. Jamie, your next hot take here, speaking of recruiting rankings, is the 2025 class will have the most top 100 prospects since 2011. And on a related note to that, offensive lineman Owen Strebig has announced his commitment date. He is going to be committing on February 8th. Perhaps related to that, Matt Freeman put in a prediction for Owen Strebig, I think it was yesterday, to choose Notre Dame. So February 8th, all eyes are going to be on that situation. Jamie, tell me about the 2025 class, most top 100 prospects since 2011. You noted to me that class had six in the top 100. Is Strebig involved in that? I don't know where
he is. 127 in the composite.
Okay. All right.
So he's a guy who easily could end up in the top 100. Right. So, and I think that's really kind of, when we're kind of speaking of tiers, to me, he's like a top 100 kid. It's just like, is he 98th or one, like whatever, who cares? Like it doesn't really matter. Right. Like, when you look at it from that perspective. But I just think that, right now they have two commits who are already in there, right? So, by the way, Notre Dame, five commits in the composite top 100 for the 2024 class, okay. Three in the top 50 for the first, that's the most they've had in, since 2013, which was that, you know, fifth ranked class. So, no more of the man, Freeman's not upgrading recruiting, because the numbers say he has, right? The numbers say he has.
Yeah.
And that's just something that's been happening. I think that where they're at, they already have two. I do think, like, you know, very good chance Deuce Knight and Ivan Taylor, Deuce Knight, the quarterback, Ivan Taylor, the safety, are going to stay as top 100 players. One, I think Notre Dame is going to have a really good offensive line class this year. So, I mean, they're very likely going to get Strebig. They have Will Black. I mean, Jack Lang certainly is going to be a battle for him, but I think they're in a good position. I would say they're the leader for him right now. And, you know, we'll see with Matty Augustine too. All these are guys that have the, I wouldn't be shocked if two out of those four, no matter, pick whoever, ends up as top 100 recruits in the class. Like, I think that is probably going to happen with them. I think just based on like what I see with like their athletic profile and where they're going to be, I would say that, there's a lot of that I think can happen for them, where they have that already. Then they have guys who are in the class right now that I think have a chance to be kind of like that Bryce Young. So Will Black is one of them. James Flanagan is another, the tight end, obviously the son of Jim Flanagan, who it would be kind of ironic if Jim Flanagan, you know, playing side by side with Bryant Young in on the defensive line in 93, and then both their sons are risers. But
it worked out.
Yeah, I would say Flanagan has a chance to be that, and he's already pretty highly ranked. But I think he's a guy who's going to climb and rise rankings. Joseph Reef is another guy that I'm super high on that I think because of his growth potential, like he's a guy that in August, he might be 250, 260. And if that's what it is, people are going to view him differently than where he's at. Like, and that's going to change how he's viewed as a prospect. And I mean, he was All-State as a junior. The guy's a stud. He's a very, very good player. I think he's got the kind of frame where he's going to add that weight, but not like get bogged down. I think he's going to stay athletic. So that's somebody like, we'll see what happens with CJ May. I'm always like wary when guys are just like looking for clout when they're trying to taking pictures with guys who are coming on visit, you know, coaches are visiting with them. I'm like, okay, well, I mean, I don't mind if I mean, everyone's getting recruited. That's fine. But usually not a good sign when that's the thing. It's like this guy's, he still wants the attention. That's fine. Don't commit. You know, don't commit or just wait and just go somewhere else. But I do think there's a reason why these people are after him, because he has that kind of like traits that translate to that. Like Chris Burgess, I don't think his film is top 100 worthy right now. But if I say like, I mean, the guy has like an 80-inch wingspan, he's got explosive testing numbers. I really like what I saw from him in person at Irish Invasion last year. And he's like 125 right now. Easily, I think he's another guy who can get a lot bigger. He's another guy that could, you know, take a jump too. So those are just guys that are in their class already. Plus, we're not even talking about like the Dallas Goldens. You know, the Devin Williams, like there's a Mark Zachary, like, and those are guys that are just there. We know they're in it for.
Yeah.
Let alone some of these other guys like Derek Meadows or whatever. Like, we'll see what happens. Obviously he's blowing up right now, but like, but you know, Taylor, like there's a bunch of guys that I think that are not even really close to kind of scratching the surface of the players that they are. So I think like, as prospects, they're going to be viewed differently. And I think that was one of the things I pointed out with the Fab 50 this year. There's like so many guys that were like top 500 a year ago, and then now they're top 50 or like top 10 in the country. And that is more so because I think like partly because of there's a willingness of the industry to be like, oh yeah, we were wrong. Like we didn't notice this guy earlier. And also partly like some of these guys are just like taking that big physical jumps. And that's happening more and more with a lot of these guys. So I just think that Notre Dame staff in general does a great job at identifying guys early and being like, this is a guy that we think is going to be this. And, you know, we saw like Keidre Young is another example too of another guy who's a riser. So I think there's a lot of guys, and maybe you won't always reflect in the rankings, like you said, like Teddy Rezac, you didn't really like totally reflect there. But like, if you told me Teddy Rezac 4 years from now was like, man, this guy was one of the top five players in the class, it wouldn't shock me. It wouldn't shock me, you know, like based on just like his athletic profile, right? So, but I do think that, you know, where they're going to land a bunch, because right now they're in on a bunch of guys that are like top 200 guys right now, that I think all aren't the kind of guys that are like, man, I see this guy dipping, you know, like they're the guys that I see rising. Mm-hmm. So because of that, I just think that they're going to have a lot of guys. And I wouldn't be surprised if they end up with the same amount or more of like guys in the top 50 that they had this year.
Yeah. I think, you know, to kind of go back to my earlier point, like it's important. The good thing is that like all the guys that you're talking about, like, yeah, top 100, that's great, you know, like I was kind of saying, is that the things they can do reflect the fact that they, hey, these are really good football players, right? And it's like with Dallas Golden and Mark Zachary and Devin Williams, like those guys, like, rank them wherever you want. Those guys can ball, you know, like they are very, very good, you know? And like with Bryce Young and Keidre Young last year, like you just saw those guys, like what they can do and how they fit into Notre Dame and what Notre Dame will want them to do, like that works, right? And I think that And the reason that I'm kind of talking about that is, you know, I remember the, like the Deon Colsey year, you know, it was like Deon Colsey or CJ Williams when he was in the class. It's like, those were highly ranked players, but you watch them and you're like, man, like what they can do is like, you know, CJ Williams was basically smaller, less move after catch than Jaden Greyhouse, right? And it's like, he's like a top 100 player, and that's great for the rankings, and it's great for the composite and all that other stuff. But like what he can do, it's like, I don't know if that's like a difference maker, you know? He ended up falling a little bit, right? And so I think that's why it's kind of important to just be talking about like their ability versus their ranking, right? And I feel like the people do a lot of that. So what you just did, like that kind of lays it out really well. And I think that, you know, when people are looking at like the start of 2025, it was like, yeah, like Deuce Knight, that's great. But people are looking at the rankings with these other guys and they're like, man, I don't know. But then it's like, that's only half the class. The other half of this class is, could be some real, real dudes. And I think people are going to be really excited about that. All right, last hot take here. Riley Leonard, please get that ankle right, because I think he's going to run for 1,000-plus yards this year. Now, I asked Jamie, Brandon Wimbush, 2017, ran for 803. Okay. Missed the game against Carolina, so I think that's notable. But
and played only really half of the bowl game, too.
Only half of the bowl game. But, like, look, these things could happen for Riley Leonard as well. I just think that given what Mike Denbrock did with Ritter, with Desmond Ritter, given what he did with Jaden Daniels ran for over 1,000 this last year. I think Riley Leonard might be a better runner than even Brandon was, because he's bigger. He's a bigger guy, right? And he still has that long speed. He can hit a home run. He can go for 80. He can go for 50, 60, whatever it may be. They're going to use him a ton. I think he's going to get a lot of run this year. And I think a big part of their game is going to be how they use him in the running game. It's going to supplement, a lot of get them into formation, spread out the team a little bit, still run for power. We talked about this on a show recently. And I do think, like, just from a pure numbers standpoint, you got to like Riley Leonard at 20-1 or whatever it is for the Heisman, or 22-1, whatever it might be, because like he's going to do numbers. And if we think Notre Dame's going to be a 11-1 type team, 12-0 type team, if you beat Texas A&M, like Coach Humph said, then the Notre Dame quarterback is going to do a lot of those numbers on all aspects of the game, right? In the passing game and in the rushing game. So I think he's going to go for 1,000-plus yards. What say you, Jamie?
First of all, I love this hot take.
Thank you, Jamie.
Love it. Appreciate it. And I do think it'll be tough, because I do think some of the games, you know, they're not going to run him as much because he's you know, they're not going to run him as much. And, you know, if it's kind of like this year, you look, there was a lot of blowouts and, you know, number, you're not stacking, you know, the numbers aren't going crazy in some of those games, right? Because it's like, even if you think about it, part of the reason that Estime got the numbers that he did is because they were like, well, let's keep him in to get some numbers. Like, they did that on purpose for him. So I don't know if they'll treat Leonard as a runner the same way. So because of that, I think 1,000 is going to be tough. In saying that, he rushed for 699 yards 2 years ago, right? He rushed for 350 last year with basically like only really five healthy games.
Yeah.
Right? So that's pretty good, right? And if you look at Ritter, he had like 600 was his highest year, right? 600 something was his highest year. And like you said, Wimbush, 800. I think it's probably more realistic that 800 plus is the probably the number that I would look for. But it's not out of the realm of possibility. Like, I do think that, like, yeah, like Greg Wasserman said, I wouldn't gamble on it. I wouldn't put a bet on it or whatever. Unless the odds were good enough, then I'd say, oh, maybe I'd think about it, put in a long shot bet. But I do think that it's in the realm of possibility. But some of it, too, has to come on him as a scrambler and what he would do there. And I do think he is a guy who when he sees it, he's going. He's like that. And that was the one thing with Daniels too, is he broke off a ton. I mean, as much as good as he was with some of the design run stuff, like he broke off a ton of like scrambles where you're like, he took that 60, you know, like,
yeah.
And you know, Leonard has done that at Duke. So, I don't know. I'm monitoring it. I like it.
We're monitoring. Oh, Jamie's got a monitoring situation. I'm going to check something right now because you brought up a good point. And here's the thing, right? Like you said, they won't use him as much as a runner in some games, right? But I think the way that he plays is that, like, he can't help but to run for yards because it's different than, say, like, you know, like Kaiser, right? Like Kaiser, he would run for yards, but like that was all kind of design stuff, right? Whereas, like, if Riley Leonard breaks away, like now we're talking about some like serious, like, you know, it's they're in man and everyone has their back turned, and it's just like a whole side of the field is open and he's running for 50, 60 yards. Like, so that's why I think he can get like Jaden Daniels last year ran for 41 rushes of over 10 plus yards. 41. Okay. 8 runs of 15 yards or more, 312 breakaway yards, right? 52 first downs for Jaden Daniels last year. Like, not that he had more scrambles last year than any other. He had more scramble yards last year than design run yards, right? So he had 721 scramble yards, 529 design run yards, you know? And so I just, that's where I think it comes from. I think it comes from the scrambles. Like, they don't plan to use him a ton, but he's got that ability, and that's the breakaway ability that I'm referring to. And that's what I'm kind of counting on for this. I don't think they're going to run him that much. I just think his dynamicism, that's a word, I think is going to take Notre Dame. Last thing here. Thank you for the super chat from Justin Knox. Off topic, Pat 40 published his rankings article. So college football rankings. Way too early. A&M isn't even ranked, and they're the only team favored against us this season. I mean, I think there's a lot of analytics stuff that goes into who's favored and who isn't, Jamie. But do you have a take on them not being ranked by 40 and then, you know, the fact that Notre Dame is, I don't know if they're, I don't know what the odds are. I don't look at the gambling stuff, but what is your
bet
take
on that game already? Like, I feel like that someone just threw out a number. I bet you can't bet it really.
Yeah.
Like, cause there's just too much stuff.
I feel like I saw something like, there's also the probability, there's probably probability stuff out there. They might be below 50% in that one. But what is your take on that?
I mean, there's not really like that. That's the thing with the schedule this year is they don't have, there isn't an Ohio State. You know, there isn't even a Clemson that, like, you know, on paper looked like they were going to be a certain ranking or whatever, right? Like, or USC. Even right, like USC this year, it's like they're very much, you know, an enigma. Like, I don't know how good USC is going to be this year. Like, in a way, I think they'll be better, but I also don't know that they'll be like double digit wins. You know, like I do think there's a lot that they kind of have to prove there, because even though they changed the defensive staff, like, I'm not sold on the personnel, right? And they got to rebuild the O-line again with like a lot of young guys. And so I think with A&M, it's like, A&M probably, if you look at like their high end talent on the team, they probably have, like, if you look at, say, like their five most talented, like draft eligible guys on their team, probably better than any of the other teams draft eligible that, you know, that you look at on the thing. So I'm like not including like USC and Zachariah Branch is not draft eligible because right. But overall too, because you just don't have, Notre Dame hasn't had too many things. Here comes these recruiting rankings again, but like have recruited at a certain level in terms of blue chips and all that. A&M is the most, even though they lost a bunch of guys. They're bringing in all these transfers, how they're going to fit, how they're going to look in week one. Louisville, I mean, it's, I don't know how good Louisville is going to be. Like, yeah. I think they're very much where, hey, maybe they could be as kind of as good as last year. But maybe they might be a lot worse because I don't know if like, the O-line is going to be good. They don't have Jawar Jordan. I mean, they got a bunch of receivers in the portal and whatever. And like, how are those guys going to be? Like, I don't know. So, and then, I mean, if you look at the rest of the schedule, there's just not a lot of, like, is Purdue going to be ranked? Like, no. Like, there aren't teams. And Florida State is like, who the heck knows with Florida State because they lost so much. And I know right now there's an overreaction to that bowl game of them getting killed by Georgia with all those guys opting out. I will say this, cause I have done a little bit of research on Florida State. They're like in the best shape of the O-line out of all those contending teams, which is interesting to me. Like they're bringing back their two tackles, their two starting tackles, their starting center were good players. Like four of their top six O-line are coming back.
Yeah.
So that's going to help them a lot, but they're replacing all their skill guys. They're replacing all their skill guys and they're replacing a lot on D. And I just don't know how they are. I mean, the schedule on paper doesn't look that tough, but then there's always been stuff like, well, Duke this year ends up being a much tougher team than whatever. And who's this year's Duke?
Who's this year's Louisville? Yeah.
I mean, Georgia Tech would be a team that I'm monitoring. I mean, their defense just stunk up the joint last year, but if they're like half decent on defense, I mean, they got some guys on offense and their offense was like pretty good. Haynes King was like, he's a quarterback you have to worry about as a runner. I mean, I think he might rush for 1,000 yards next year. Like, so there's, it's going to be interesting. You just don't know what the schedule is going to look like now. And it's too early. I think Bill Connolly said he's going to release his returning production rankings next week, which is informative, but it doesn't say the whole story. But it's still interesting. And I'm going to be interested to kind of see that where everybody's at. Because, you know, like Stanford should return. It's returning basically everybody, but they stunk. So how much better are they going to be? Probably a little bit better, but not that much better.
Yeah. So we're monitoring that stuff. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in. That's going to do it today. If you liked it, please subscribe to the channel. Please hit the notification bell. Please like this video. Really helps us out. We're going to be back next week. There's going to be no show tomorrow because of my schedule. So that's why we moved it to today. So there's going to be no show tomorrow. Tuesday. We're scheduled to have Mike Goolsby on the show. We're going to have Mike Goolsby out here. He wants to talk some ball. He said, Greg, I want to talk ball. I said, you know what? You can come on our show. We're going to talk about ball. We're going to talk about all sorts of good stuff. So we might be having Mike Goolsby on the show. So you're going to want to check that out. Subscribe, like, notification bell. Do all those things. Have a good weekend, everyone. We'll talk to you soon. Keep hitting and hustling.